Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. I used to host the Art of Charm podcast, but now it's time for something new. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to The Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Welcome to the best hour in the universe. Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus over there.
I'm so happy to be here, by the way.
I'm happy to have you here, and I'm always happy when you're in the flesh here.
I like being in the studio. I got to see Gina. I got to see Paul Bryan today. This was a winning day. Gary's here.
I had a thought that you I know we should be talking about all things legal.
Right, but every once in a while we diverge just to get people in Twitter into a flutter.
I had a thought on my show that some people may have heard, but I'll bring it up preemptively on this show because it'll appear a little later in the week. It's a long story.
Okay.
Anyway, this. I was thinking about folks that undergo the transition, the sex change.
Right.
Operation.
Trannies.
And
can we call them trannies? Well, we used to, when we were growing up, we could say tranny.
Well, here's the thing, and this is an interesting thing, and it's part of what's confusing me a little bit in life, which is, there was a certain point where you were a cross dresser if right. you were a guy that would go out in drag, but if you're a transsexual, you had become the other person,
right?
The other sex,
right?
And now they talk about the transsexual community, but these are still folks who are cross dressing but haven't undergone the surgery, so now right. it's become a little confusing.
It's the whole self-identification thing. You can identify as this, that, or the other thing. When we were growing up, I could name right now 3 instances of close encounters of the transsexual kind. One would be Dave Stewart. Do you remember Dave Stewart, the pitcher?
Yes.
He got busted, and there was somebody was – then Eddie Murphy.
He was also the lead guy from the Eurythmics, right?
Yeah.
All right. So then, Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy. And then the third
– Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant. And then – actually, there's a fourth, but it was a client, so I can't name it.
So they picked up on transsexuals.
Wasn't that the difference? Because when we were growing up, the difference between Santa Monica Boulevard – and Sunset Boulevard, or Hollywood Boulevard, was Santa Monica. We used to call that's where chicken hawks trolled,
mm-hmm.
and then Hollywood Boulevard was you were kind of like in between, go either way, and then Sunset was kind of straight sex, heterosexual sex.
Yeah, where the prostitutes. Yeah, yeah. I realized gay code when I was hitchhiking on Santa Monica Boulevard many years ago. And a day that I like to think back on as the worst day of my life.
Wouldn't have been the day that they impounded your car and you didn't have the money to get it out?
Well, this one was like it, but different,
yeah.
Which is the worst day of my life. And a lot of people sit around and think about the best day of their life, but I like to sit around and think the life is half empty. And I have a list of women who would be disgusted if they had sex with me
right.
versus a list of women I would like to get into
like
bed.
To?
And I have the worst day of my life. The worst day of my life, and then I'll get back to my sex change idea.
Okay.
The worst day of my life was I got a job out of high school. When I got out of high school, it was 1982. The economy was horrible. All I know is I remember the home savings and loan on Ventura and Laurel Canyon. When you'd walk in, it had a T-bill, like a three-year T-bill was like 19%.
Right.
Like that's how insane the economy was.
I remember buying a condominium in 1983 on California Boulevard in Pasadena, and I thought I'd hit the lottery because World Savings and Loan gave me like a 14% fixed rate for 1 year. And then it fluctuated like LIBOR plus five or something crazy.
So it was an insane economy. There were no jobs to be had. I got a job with a guy who I'm going to bring up to you because I have brought his name up before, Paul Feigin.
The originator of the Feigin Suite.
He originated the Feigin Suite.
Which was, for those of you who don't understand what a Feigin Suite is, if you see a barrister's suite or an executive suite, the original, the OG, was Paul Feigin, who had the Feigin Suite.
This guy, and I believe we've discussed it before, he drove around a purple Excalibur car. He had long hair.
Really long
hair. Very eccentric.
Right.
Liked the ladies, and whatever he did, he managed to get thrown out of the bar.
Well, and the reason I remember him is I somehow got, I forget, I want to say it was his nephew, but, you know, it was kind of cloudy back then, had a party, and he had the Knack play at the party. Or
wow.
It was Devo. It was Devo or the Knack, and I can't remember which.
I knew a guy named Conley Euler.
There's no way the guy's name was Conley Euler. That's like my friend. I went to high school with Silky Hyman, whose brother's name was Buster. I
mean, they called him Buster.
Buster and Silky.
We knew a girl named Debbie Hyman, and we called her Buster in high school.
Oh, my God. I went to school with Silky Hyman, whose brother's name was Buster. Swear to you.
But his real name was Neil, and they called him Buster. That's why. Nobody's named. No one's Christian name is Buster. Conley Euler.
Conley Euler is unbelievable.
Was the head of the bar.
Really?
You got to look it up, Gary. He was
Gary's on it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I'm actually looking at an obit, so it doesn't maybe have.
Oh, Conley Euler is dead?
Yeah.
Yes.
2015.
Yeah, he was the head of the Bar Association out here for a while.
How old was he when he died?
He must have been in the early 90s.
Oh. I think he was 85.
Wow, Conley Euler. I've never heard of him.
He was the big lawyer, head of the bar, something, something.
81, it appears.
He was head of the bar in 81.
No, I'm sorry. He was 81 years his death.
Oh, yes. He was younger than I thought. So, he was a friend of mine's dad, and he was a nice enough guy.
Your friend's name was Houston?
And he knew Houston. He knew Paul Feigin.
Okay.
Because he was a lawyer.
Everybody knew Feigin. Feigin became, it was like Xerox or Kleenex.
And Feigin, again, eccentric guy, got thrown out of the bar, an Excalibur, like a pimp mobile, drove around, everything else. I like the young ladies, invented these suites.
Right.
And in these suites, he invented this sort of format where you'd walk out of the elevator, you'd have a receptionist, there was a law library that was shared by all the suites and blah, blah, blah. And he needed some doofuses to paint all these suites because the lawyers would move in and then they'd move out. And in between moving in and moving out, someone would have to spread around the Mustang white or Navajo white. Those were the two whites we would paint on.
Is there
kind
still
of beige.
Navajo white?
It doesn't seem like in this day and age of them changing the mascot for the Cleveland Indians and stuff
That's
like
why
that.
Because I would just think that Navajo white is not. If I
it's
can't
also
say,
kind of oxymoronic, right?
Right. Right. I don't get. But you remember
Jamaican white.
We talked about this. I can't say off the reservation anymore.
No,
so
I know.
If I can't say off the reservation, how can you say Navajo white?
Yeah, and my feeling is like, how are we going to say Indian giver, especially when you're describing someone who's trying to Jew you down? So,
or say how many the old joke? How many Jews to out Armo and Armo? You know
Yeah,
I can't even say that anymore.
I got a glimpse behind the curtain of the Armo community.
Yeah,
I sold you people short. I thought it was all just a lot of cologne and chain smoking and well-used BMWs.
Right, in the square
and hanging out and yelling on a cell phone.
Right.
I employed an Armo guy over at the other shop, and every single problem...
Is his name Harut?
His name is Shunt.
Shunt. Okay, Shunt. Shunt.
Shunt. Shunt. Every Shunt. Single problem that Stent. Shunt, Sean, I don't know. Yeah, well, we call him Sean, so I just, yeah. he's one of these, he's one of the good ones who has a confusing name, so he does the, I'm Sean.
I'm Sean, right.
Every single time.
I love when
time,
they say my name is Harry.
Every single time something that comes up, like, geez, how are we going to get this car smogged? It doesn't have a catalytic. I know a guy.
I know a guy. Yeah.
Everybody's like, where are we going to throw that mattress? I can't take it. Don't worry. I got a guy. The Armo's got a guy for everything.
It's the, we are the West Coast version of New Jersey. So that's how it works.
I had no idea that the Armo's sort of worked the Los Angeles underground, but boy, do they got a guy.
They always have a guy. When you wanted to get the present for Lynette,
mm-hmm.
I went to my guy,
mm-hmm.
and he had a guy.
I like that. I feel the Corollas, we don't have a guy. We're just a bunch of poor people from the valley. Fijian is still alive?
No way.
No way.
I've yet to find something saying he's dead. I can confirm that
Fijian is still alive. We must have Fijian as a guest.
I have a phone number here. I can confirm that in at least as recently as 2015, he is alive. He is disbarred, and this is a great update. He is now a magician performing under the name Fantastic Fig.
Well,
wow.
He called himself Fig.
Yeah.
So his nickname. Paul Feijan's nickname was Fig.
Can you see if you can get him on the phone?
Magic. Yeah, like, this isn't speculative.
Well, that's incredible. So, Feijan.
Feijan was.
Now, Feijan seemed old when I was 19, so yeah. That's
so
why.
Can you imagine? I wish we had a picture of Paul Feijan.
Oh, I'm.
Well, Gary calls him up. Can I tell you one thing? Did you know what this is? This is National Small Business Month.
Oh, good.
Which is, you and I should talk about that. Yeah. Whether you're just starting out or you've got a unbelievable powerhouse business like Corolla Digital, 2018 is a unique opportunity. New tax law includes the most significant changes for business owners in 30 years. I think that's true. 2018, yeah, that is true. LegalZoom can help you understand what it means for you. They're not a law firm, but they have a network of tax professionals. By the way, this is the first time in the information that I've had that we now have added tax professionals.
Yes.
So pay attention. And attorneys to answer your questions. 16 years providing business owners with tools to start and run their business. Keep listening to find out how LegalZoom can help you during National Small Business Month. Don't miss out. Gary?
In the meantime, go to LegalZoom.com/doubt and get special savings. That's LegalZoom.com/doubt. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. LegalZoom.com/doubt. Now, I have a picture for you I'm about to put up. It is a couple years old, probably about 4 or 5, but I think it's a good representation.
And wait, before, as the drum roll, how old do we think Mr. Feijan is?
I believe he's 80.
Okay.
Let's see.
Okay.
Not see. Sure if
Adam or I, do we okay.
No, yeah, that's Paul Feijan. Paul Feijan's color was purple. He drove around a purple Excalibur. He had a house that had a mosaic on the floor that said Fig's World or something in it. And that is a guy who just danced to the tune of his own piper his entire life. And he knew Conley Euler.
Okay.
And Conley Euler knew I was a friend of his son's who was rudderless. Like, I got out of high school. There were no jobs. Anyway, I just go to supermarkets and liquor stores and go, do you need a guy to stack boxes or something? And they go, no, we don't. We're not hiring anybody. So he needed someone to paint these offices. So somehow he got on to me, and he had a guy named Andy. Andy was a Jehovah's Witness who had 7 kids. He named them all after apostles, I believe. And he was the problem. See, if you and I were painters,
right,
painting would be an excellent job. Like, if I showed up to work, painting is mindless. It's endless. These offices had dropped acoustic ceilings,
mm-hmm.
and like no baseboard,
oh,
and
so
the walls just ended.
You didn't have to tape, because taping in the, I always used to, the reason I never liked painting was that old expression that 90% of it is the preparation.
Yeah. Well, here's the problem. All it would be is a sea of walls. No, again, no casing around the windows or doors.
Right.
It's like a commercial thing. You wouldn't break the brush out and get the different color paint.
Right,
you could cut it in.
They just tack up the drywall. They tape it.
Me
and
this guy,
it.
Andy, we would paint 4 days a week, 10 hours a day, and he was a Jehovah's Witness. And we had no radio, and all I would hear is him proselytizing. There was nothing. If you were standing next to me, we'd be doing the most boring job, repetitive boring job in the world, but we'd be laughing our asses off the entire time. This guy, it was like torture. He was just sitting next to me. He drove a beat-up van, and we'd just be in the same office all day, no radio, and a guy who was a born-again Jehovah's whatever, he didn't want to hear a word of it. You want to talk about chicks and beer and getting laid.
Right, exactly.
Whatever. So I had to go down there one day in Century City. He had his buildings in the Twin Towers there.
Right, 1900 Century Park.
Yeah, where they filmed Die Hard famously. Right. And then later on, it was always weird because like Comedy Central was there. And I'd go back to the building. I used to paint. I'm living in a garage in North Hollywood. I have no transportation. I have no money. But I have this gig that's like 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. or something like that, or 6 p.m. Yeah, it's at 5 p.m. And I borrow my buddy's motorcycle. And I drive it over to Century City. Like, I get it. It's like 6 in the morning. I'm driving from North Hollywood to Century City on my buddy's motorcycle. And I come pulling into Century City on his motorcycle. And parking in Century City is like $19 a day or something back then. Like,
I know. I mean, now it's even crazier. It's almost
crazy.
$50.
Right. But back then, in 1983, it's like $18 for the day. And I'm like, I'll probably make $50 the whole day. I can't allocate half of it to parking. So they have these big cement parking structures, big ramps going down, and these big high cement retaining walls or whatever. And I just kind of take the bike and I just kind of park it. I just kind of stash it off to the side, kind of by the parking structure, just in front of a big cement wall. And I go upstairs and me and Andy paint for a miserable 10 hours. And at 5 o'clock, I come down and I'm getting, you know, $7 an hour. So whatever the math is, tax is being taken out. I come down, the bike's gone. And I'm like, did I get my buddy's bike stolen? Where is this bike? And I'm thinking, is it stolen? Does it get you know, impounded? Like, where is it? And so I start wandering around this big Century City Mall. Right. And again, no cell phones, no credit cards, no wallet, no money.
Cavernous down there.
Yeah, I don't have anything on me. I don't have $2 on me. I don't have a bus token. I don't have a phone number. I don't have anything. I'm just wandering around. I used to just wander around with no money, no anything. And I don't have a bottle of water. I'm just wandering. And eventually I get to like the sheriff area or whatever. And I said, hey.
That's right. There's a little substation.
Yeah. And I said, hey, listen, I had a motorcycle and I parked it by this parking structure and it's not there. So do you hear about anything getting stolen or impounded or something? And the guy behind the counter is like, yeah. Yeah, that was me. I had it towed. And I was like, what? Where was your attitude at that age?
What was your attitude? Were you kind of beaten down?
I was beaten down. I was completely beaten down. I didn't even yell at him. I just said, what? Where would it be towed then? If you had it towed, where's
like,
the closest
the tow yard or
impound
whatever.
Lot? And he's like, Santa Monica. And I'm like, all I was thinking at that time is hopefully this impound lot somewhere between my garage that I have to return home to and this Century City building, but this is further
away.
Out. This is it's You're literally
going to the sea. You have to go to the
sea. You have to go to the sea.
Yeah.
And I was like, why did you do it? And he said, hey, we got a code. You can't park an internal combustion engine that close to a structure or whatever. And it's like, huge, it's two-story retainer wall, wall.
You couldn't light that place on fire
with a cruise missile.
I got the captain from the Glendale Fire Department who was the arsonist extraordinaire to do it.
I was just like, it was a big cement wall, it was a sea of concrete, it was a Honda, XR 275 or something, just sitting there, like, I towed it. I had a towed.
Like, was he proud of it, or was
he was just like, "This is what I did."
It was matter of fact.
I think it was like, look, you got, this is why you got to pay the $18 to park. I was like, "That's a motorcycle. It's not a car," you know. So I towed it. I just went, thanks a lot. And all I did was start walking in the general direction of my garage.
Oh, my God.
Which is miles and miles away on the other side of the hill.
City's the other side of the hill. But you're at that point, that really is, you're beaten down.
Beaten down.
Like, that is, that. I mean, you're just walking. That's almost aimless in the desert.
I'm walking.
You're like the Jews.
I'm like wandering the desert.
Wandering the desert, yeah.
Yep, and I'm just wandering. I make my way up to Santa Monica Boulevard, and I just stick my thumb out, and I'm just walking with my thumb out. And at some point, guy who looks like the lead singer from the B-52s pulls up in a Cadillac Eldorado convertible, like 72, like the biggest land yacht ever to come out of Detroit.
It had a good fin on it, didn't it? 72?
Not 72, not in the 70s. It was just the biggest, widest, longest.
So 68 is when they stopped it?
It probably stopped the fins in the 60s, and this thing was just a land yacht.
Wow.
And this guy just pulled in, and, you know, like red leather interior and top down, and just said, like, hop in, sailor. You know, and I was like, okay. And I got in, and we just started trucking down Santa Monica Boulevard. And at a certain point, we got to, like, close to Laurel Canyon. That's where I needed to stop and go up and over the canyon. And I said, just drop me here. And he's like, my apartment's right up the street. You want to get high?
Oh.
And I remember thinking, I wouldn't mind getting high, but
after this day, I'd love to get high.
Is the bong shaped like your dick?
Did it go through your mind immediately, or were you kind of too naive and beaten down at that
point? I was
like
naive, beaten down, and everything, but I did realize I was on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Right. Back then, that was Chicken Hawk Central.
Guy had a handlebar mustache, driving up and down in a convertible. Right. And I remember thinking, get high in your apartment. Again, I'd be happy to get high in your apartment, although I do still have to get back to this garage.
Right.
And then once I get back to the garage, I don't have transportation or money or anything else.
What are you going to do with the garage? Trade food stamps or green stamps?
I tell him, I'd love to, but I got to be at a hasty retreat to the garage. Now I'm on Laurel Canyon, and I just start hitchhiking.
So you're going to go
Laurel Canyon,
right? So you're going to go. You're at the top of the hill.
No, I'm at the bottom. I'm on Sunset. I'm on Santa Monica.
Wow.
I got to go up and over.
Okay.
So I start hitchhiking.
This guy was not going to leave his bandwidth of Santa Monica Boulevard. He wasn't taking you up the hill unless you go to his place.
He needed someone to get high with him, and evidently I wasn't that guy.
Right.
So I was just hitchhiking, and eventually I got picked up and taken up and down Laurel, and then walked my way back to my dad and stepmom's garage in North Hollywood. By this time, it was like 7 o'clock, 7:30 at night, and
I can't believe anything except just pass out at that point.
Well, my friend's bike was in the impound yard in Santa Monica, and I didn't have any money, and I couldn't leave it in the impound lot. It was his bike. Like, he needed it. And so
that was so responsible of you.
Well, I always had this very, as you know.
Yes.
And this is why it infuriates me. My parents never did anything for me. So the notion of somebody doing something for me and me not making them square or right or whatever.
You're obsessive about it.
It drives me nuts. And it also drives me nuts how insanely casual people can be with making someone whole again. I've had many conversations with people that went like, you know, you borrowed $8,000 from me to say it was part of the down payment for your house. And then you said, because you were coming from out of the country, it was just tied up in the bank and you just need a couple days to free it up. So it was just going to be a quickie loan and you're going to get it back to me. It's been 9 years and I haven't gotten any of that money.
And you just sold your house for, four times what you bought it for.
Three and a half. And maybe I could get that eight back. And they went, I thought I paid you that. And I go, no, you absolutely didn't. All right. Okay. Anyway. Let's go. Is there a place that has good hummus around here? It's like, that's the end of this exchange? Because I would be going insane if I were you. I cannot believe you approach these things with such a casualness. But okay, I actually envy you. I wish I was wired that way. But
that lack of guilt?
I am not wired that way. This guy was nice enough to lend me his bike. He was poor like I was. This bike is his only form of transportation. And I needed to get it from this impound lot before they charged me for a second day. I knew once they got to midnight, they'd go, it's a two-day impound
Absolutely.
Lot. Right.
Absolutely.
So,
$1,201, you'd have to pay the extra. Back then, what was the impound? Was it like in the 40s or was it over triple figures?
It's always the same amount. It's like parking tickets and speeding tickets and impound stuff. It's always way too much for poor people.
Right. It's designed that way. It's like bail on a traffic ticket. They design it just enough so you actually contemplate, would I pay it or do I want to do the $30 a day in jail as the alternative?
Right. So it was like, I'd probably say it was... It's always like 75, 80 bucks or something, but I just worked 10 hours and made $70, right. You know, so.
So it's kind of like I should have just stayed in bed.
Now I'm at home and I'm thinking, all right, I can borrow my stepmom's car. I can borrow $75. I don't have any cash or any money. I borrow the money from a few sources. I can tell my buddy Chris bad news about your bike. It's in Santa Monica. I can tell you to like walk to my house and then we'll get my stepmom's Honda.
Right.
She's home from work. And then I'll take the Honda to Santa Monica and then either he'll ride it back or I'll ride the bike back. I can't remember. Give the guy the $80. By the time we got back to my garage, it was, you know, 10 o'clock at night. And all I had to do was get up at 5:30 and go back to Century City and redo the whole thing again.
God.
And that whole day cost me like probably out of pocket about $50 if you take the 70 that I would have earned and
right.
then you put it to the impound lot and gas and everything. And I just remember, got to be the worst day of my life.
That's just awful.
And then I do remember these conversations, though. I had another bike towed. I've had three bikes towed. One bike, speaking
amazing
of
amazing that you can get, this got to be a while ago, because now you never see a bike get towed, do you?
No. Speaking of the unrepentant, I had a roommate. He wanted to borrow my bike because he was attending class at UCLA. I was living in an apartment in North Hollywood some years later. So I said, yeah, go ahead and borrow the bike. I got my pickup truck for work. He borrowed the bike. He drove it to UCLA. When he was at UCLA, they stole the license plate off the bike. He then drove it home, and he said, sorry, man, they stole the license plate off of the bike. He then parked it out in the street, and they then towed the bike because it had no license plate on it. And his attitude, my roommate's attitude, was, hey, tough break.
Yeah.
I guess you got to have fun. You want me to drop you off down at the impound yard? I then went down to the bike was...
Are you still the kind of the beaten down Corolla at that point as opposed
yes.
to an angry Corolla?
Yeah. Well, I had a choice words with the guys at the impound lot because the impound lot is...
Dr. Drew would call that transference.
It is the worst people... This is the impound lot. This is a sort of government sanctioned mafia.
Right. It's legalized extortion.
It's basically. Legalized extortion. Yeah. Here's what it is. They go on a sweep. The sweep was like 10 o'clock at night. The cops go around checking everything and just getting the impound guys. They just go on a sweep. They sweep everything. They take your bike. You wake up the next morning. The bike's gone.
Right.
You then go to the impound lot and
they're holding it hostage.
Hey, give me my bike. And they go, yeah, give us. I remember the guy. I remember very clearly. You talk to the person behind the window. Two things. One is I said, the bike is registered. It had the license plate stolen. So I was basically a victim of crime
right.
here. And the guy at the impound lot said, they shouldn't have towed it. And I said, how's that work? And he said, if someone stole your plate, they shouldn't have towed it. They should have checked the VIN number on the handlebars or, you know, in the
right.
front area. And I said, yeah. They should have. I agree. And he said, okay, that'll be 2 days storage fee.
Yeah.
And I said, but you agree they shouldn't have towed it, right? And he said, they shouldn't have towed it.
But they did.
But they did.
And I want to make you feel even worse.
And it's behind that gate with the barbed wire and the weird wheels, and it's not going anywhere. And I remember the guy saying, and I was like, so like dejected and broken. I was like, all right, so when it came in at like 10:51 that night, now it's 7:07 the next morning, and he goes, that'll be 2 days storage. Ugh. And I said, so it's like, you know, $57 tow and 2 days storage, you know, $31 a day. And I said, 2 days storage, it hasn't been here 9 hours.
Right.
And he said, yeah, well, it came in on a Tuesday night.
Right.
And now it's Wednesday. And
I said, thanks a lot.
Yeah, it came in at 11 o'clock Tuesday night. Now it's Wednesday morning. It's been 8 hours and 27 minutes. And he's like, 2 days storage. And I said, it's like parking at LAX. They just roll it on up. And I said, it hasn't even been 1 day. It hasn't been 24 hours. It hasn't even been a third of it. It's been a third of 1 day. And you're charging me 2 days. And the guy just said, look, the bike's back there. Do you want it or not? Because if you don't want it, you can just leave. Yep. If you want it,
and I've already,
it's 2 days storage. Yeah. And you know what I said? Mm. This is a little bit of the older asshole Corolla, like peeking through. I said, you guys should just make it 3 days. Like, why not? You're leaving money on the table. You have my property. I can't get to it. You're going ahead. Why just do a dusting of rape? Why not all out
right,
dry exactly. anal? Like, why are you stopping at 2 days? 2 days is made up. So why not go 3 days or a month?
Right. You could just say there's a 1 week minimum.
Just say you have a time machine. It's a one week minimum. Yeah. Just go ahead. You're leaving good money. As long as you're gouging everyone, why not just really gouge? You just charge for 3 days. And when people question it, you should go,
right.
Yeah. When people question the 3 days, you just go, look, you don't want your bike back. You don't have your form of transportation. So then I paid. Yeah, I got it back. My roommate just went, a tough break.
Yeah.
Like he never gave me a nickel or anything. Never gave me a penny.
That's
the way most people are wired. And that was the second time, the third time the bike was towed. I was on it. But
do you know who's had a worse day than those 2 days? Gary, did you see the news today, by the way?
Yes, I've been reading the news all morning.
What do you think's the big story today?
Well, there were some indictments handed down, which was certainly a large story.
Yes.
Is that what you're referring to?
That's exactly what I'm referring to.
Yeah.
12 people?
13, to the 13. Best of my knowledge.
Okay.
And there's a 14th that is an American citizen that they're ancillarily trying to connect to this, who pled guilty to some stuff a few days ago.
Correct. So can I tie you want me to tie this all together?
Yeah.
So earlier in the week, those of you who pay attention know that Paul Manafort has a co-defendant who is a guy who started as his intern. Get this. And his intern is a guy by the name of Gates. Was indicted with Manafort, and Gates filed something under seal, or his current lawyers did, telling the judge they wanted to withdraw, which is usually a telltale sign that he's working out a plea agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Hired a guy. His new lawyer is a guy who hasn't entered an appearance yet, but is a person named Thomas Green. Thomas Green is a veteran Washington, D.C. lawyer known for representing Denny Hastert and getting his plea deal. Supposedly, if you believe the reports, Gates is about to sign a plea deal to roll over on Manafort, which is standard operating procedure. And everybody who says this Russian thing is over.
I have a question for you on this. Yeah. I think the audience might be interested in this. I've read a little bit about it. But can you – a lot of the headlines are mentioning the Queen for the Day interview.
Right.
Can you explain what that is for our listeners?
For those of you who are
too
young –
You brought that up.
Yeah.
Haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Multiple times.
And just so you know, because one of my associates today, who's a sharp lawyer, said she always thought Queen for a Day is like they make you a queen. I said, no, there was a TV show called Queen for a Day. In fact, my mom's best friend years ago, Millicent Fishbein, who lives on Chevy Chase by us, Millicent used to be the gal who was kind of the Vanna White on Queen for a Day. And yeah. they would housewives would come on there and they would tell these stories of woe, and then you would the winner the worst story of woe would become queen for a day.
Yeah. And ironically they'd win a vacuum cleaner.
Exactly. So that was the best
part of it.
They
could go home and start cleaning.
So in the federal system, when you're a lawyer and your client wants to plead, you go in and they give you a one-page document or letter or two-page document. It's called a queen for a day. Anything you say can't be used against you unless it's independently done or you get on the stand and lie. And what it is they're giving you a test run to see whether or not the information you've got is something they want to use. So when you do a queen for a day, it means you're basically saying, okay, I give up. It's Ollie Ollie Oxen. I give up. And is my information good enough that you're going to give me a deal? And so Gates has done that, and Gates, maybe even by the time this is goes to air tomorrow, you'll have heard that they either filed it or they filed it under seal. He's going to roll on Manafort. Then today they have the indictments with the Russians who are meddling. And interestingly enough, all of this has to do with identity theft and analytics and social media and hijacking stuff in order to denigrate little Marco Rubio, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and to promote Trump rallies, things of that nature. The interesting part to tie this around is the noose that is being wrapped around somebody's neck here is Jared Kushner. Because Kushner, if you go back, you will remember, was kind of credited immediately after the election back in November, a year ago, with being this analytics genius, that he had micro-targeted various areas and things like that and various demographics, and especially in the purple states, and that's where Hillary Clinton had screwed up. So what you've got now is they're trying to show the special counsel that what happened was is that there was a conspiracy between the Russians who were manipulating the data and the analytics. Kushner, who was also had an amazing, by all accounts, data manipulation, and I'm not saying that in the worst sense of the world, but he would crunch the numbers. They would know, they could get down to basically, they could know a demographic in one block and who you were and what you wanted to see, and they could micro-target you. So they're trying to now get Gates to roll over on Manafort. So this would be like giving Gary a incentive to roll over on you. He started as an intern. He's been loyal to you, but now they say, okay, you're going to go away for the rest of your life unless you roll on Adam. Mm-hmm. They're going to get Manafort. They're going to try to squeeze Manafort. Anybody who says this thing is nearing the end doesn't understand that until they get Manafort either convicted or squeezed, that this thing is not going to end, and they're aiming for Kushner. I mean, that's who this thing is headed for.
And how does this – Manafort's title was
– he was head of the campaign. Gates was his deputy. Gates survived him. When all this stuff about the Ukraine came out, Manafort was kind of tossed. Gates lasted, and Gates went on to the inaugural committee. And then you've got that meeting at Trump Tower. That's where all of this is headed for, and that's what they – that's you're basically seeing the circle come complete here.
What's this going to do to Trump? And are the Russians interested – so is their end game chaos?
Yes.
And –
yes, then and to get people to argue.
Yeah.
Yeah, to so, get these fights, to
so,
get the...
Right.
Yeah.
So let me...
so discord.
Let me, all right, so let me see if I can encapsulate this. Russia...
This is my favorite part of the show, by the way, is when you distill it down.
Well, I'm going to try, but I do not know anything about these events and the world, so I'm just trying to hear it with fresh ears.
Okay.
Russia can't nuke us because we're going to nuke them, and that's just not the way we do things anymore.
That was in the old days, they called that MAD, mutually right. assured destruction.
Right. But on the other hand, everyone who's not them is sort of the enemy.
Correct.
Especially anybody who's got a big swinging dick like we do. You know, maybe right. they're not interested in Jamaica, but they're interested in us because everyone is a threat who has something,
right.
and we have something. Right. Okay. So in a world where there's no more codes and nukes per se,
well,
how about
it's kind of a stalemate, if you will. Right?
Yeah. So how about we just go ahead and cause disruption,
right,
which is sort of the equivalent of when people would say, you know what the big terrorist attack is going to be? And you go, what, sarin gas in downtown L.A.? No, the grid.
Yeah.
They're going to screw the grid up. And you go, so what? You know, they go, oh, believe me. So what? Nothing. You're going to get sewage coming through your spigot and your kitchen sink. Like, and then you start to realize, oh, that is, it's not that sexy, but it's going to cause more havoc than any bomb could ever do, would
right.
be the grid.
Right.
So this is like the grid for them. It's not an explosion. It's just, we've been fighting for a year, totally disruptive. And
you know, it's really effective as to what it's done. I mean, you know, people,
mission accomplished. Right. Just the fact that we're talking about it a year plus in.
Exactly. So, the fact that we're here, how many months later, and we're still yakking.
So also, they wanted Trump not because they want Trump, but because Trump would cause more disruption, more of what they want, more chaos.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I've had this argument with other people. They say, no, they've got him by the balls, you know, the dossier. They've got the, you know, that he was doing golden showers with hookers in Moscow. And I said, you know, Stormy Daniels comes out, you know, his base, they don't care about that shit. I mean, they really don't. I mean, this one today, the McDougal or whatever her name is, that supposedly was, her story was bought and killed by national media. It's meaningless. It really is. I mean, to the same way that Bill Clinton's history was meaningless to his demographic, this stuff is meaningless to Trump. They want it because they know that he's a wild card and creates these divisions.
They want chaos. Yeah. So, all right. So you get Trump in. Trump's going to cause chaos. Then, as far as the Russian collusion part, if you're Russia and you'd like maximum chaos, you then start leaking stuff about the collusion.
Right.
Because if you really want chaos, you can't just have Trump in there and no collusion, and you're the keeper of the collusion, or at least you know what your involvement was in this affair. Do you then leak your own stuff?
Well, I saw something today, Gary, I forget the name, I'll never be able to pronounce it, but some spokesperson for Russia said, seriously, you think 13 people on Facebook and Twitter are going to affect a American election? That was kind of, you know, and they poo-pooed it, which was surprisingly similar to what the White House said, that this proves that there was no collusion because it was only 13 people who were meddling and blah, blah, blah.
Well, so then it kind of, Gary has some.
It's Maria Zakharova.
Very good. So, wait, say that again, the last name?
Zakharova.
Okay, very
so
good.
So then it kind of begs the question, the first thing you think about with electronics, covert, whatever, and meddling. You think, well, they're going to change votes, but that's not never been the charge.
It's never been the charge.
The charge is always,
there's no, you know, the only, I've always thought that makes no sense because we're not doing online voting. It's not like
right.
somebody's
so the charge is misinformation.
Right.
So why don't you think about it? I'll buy you a little time because I'll talk
Will
about Tommy
me?
John. But you tell me, so when I think like misinformation, I think, well, I don't think I could go online and be looking at one of my car site magazines and have something pop up that said Hillary, crooked Clinton, buried Benghazi or something, and I would go, oh, well, I've completely changed my mind on her. I don't think it would affect me, but you tell me like this sort of real life scenario of how this, and I have talked to someone before where I was like, I didn't see anything pop up, and they're like, you're in California. No one's interested in you. That's going for Hillary Clinton. We have no need to target us. It's a fait accompli here. But what about if you're in one of these swing states or something? You think about it. I'll tell you about Tommy John. No time like the present to upgrade your old uncomfortable underwear to Tommy John. Just the best. It is mind-blowing comfort. Underwear that never rides up, waistbands that never roll down. No more picking the wedgies out and rearranging the goods.
Can I just say something? They, you know, they're known for their underwear, meaning the boxers,
yes.
right?
Boxer briefs.
I think their shirts are their single best item. I mean, I love the underwear. I wear them all the time. They're great for traveling, but their shirts, I work out in the shirts. I wear the shirts after I work out. I think their shirts are unbelievable.
I love the fact that they invented an undershirt that's an actual undershirt.
Right.
My whole life, I've been wearing these like big, thick, cottony Hanes undershirts, right, and then you put a shirt over, and it just feels like you're wearing two shirts.
Plus, when you do the T-shirt underneath, the traditional T-shirt, the collar's always like frays, and then
they come untucked right. from your pants, and it's like now your pants are falling down.
Exactly.
Now, these undershirts are undershirts, and I love it. They're backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. Tommy John. No adjustment needed, Gary.
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam and get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
All right, so Mark, the real world kind of scenario that you as a lawyer could say this affected the outcome of this election because...
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned this idea that we wouldn't know because we live in California. By the way, I'm declaring so that the IRS and FTB, mostly the FTB, understands I'm no longer a resident of California. I spend more than half my time outside of California. But nevertheless, it's the same calculation that the Republicans made in the tax cuts. They said, we're going to eliminate the deduction for state income tax. Okay. Now, who does that hit the hardest? It hits you and me in California. It hits a New York resident. It does not hit Florida or Nevada because they have no state income tax. The Machiavellian would say, well, they're never going to win California. They're never going to win New York. Florida's in play. So this is, it's going to be a benefit to them. Nevada's in play. Right. So it's the same thing. It's micro targeting where you're on the bubble. And I think that's what they felt like.
So it manifested itself in what way to somebody who was in a state that was on the bubble and it was just enough to push it over into Trump's direction? How did it manifest itself in terms of John Q. Public sitting at their computer or turning on their TV set?
Or turning on their TV set or being out in the ether. Part of the – I hate to say it. It's a very paternalistic and in some ways arrogant analysis. But, there are 3 or 4 or 5%. I always get a kick when somebody says, 3 days before the election, who are you going to vote for? And there's like – 8%, unsure or undecided. Yeah. It's like, where have you been?
When I pick up the USA Today and it has that snapshot pie chart, whatever, yeah. And it says favorite comfort food, it's like meatloaf, 31%, lasagna, 29%, 41%, undecided, won't comment. It's like, would you pick tacos, asshole? If I was on that beat, I would not leave that person's doorstep. Like they'd go, I really don't have, what did your mom make when you were sick? Well, she would make tomato soup. Good tomato soup, asshole.
So
they drive me nuts.
You're so right. And so I'm not even talking about a large proportion, but if it's 2 or 3% in certain areas, that's for the same reason that somebody, in the DNC had back when Obama was running one of the most sophisticated micro demographic targeting operations. Kushner, as we just discussed a little while ago, was doing analytics. That when you get down to razor thin margins, they believe that they can tailor a message to certain people to turn it. I mean, otherwise, why would you have data analytics?
Gary, find that snapshot from USA Today. I have it somewhere in my computer. It drives me nuts. The one that drives me nuts is like, won't say.
Won't say.
Come on. Is it spare ribs? Is it lasagna or is it chicken soup? You're getting warm. But I really not just don't want to. It's too personal. If I said waffles, that could come back to haunt me. My mom could read this and went, "What? It was banana pancakes."
You always wanted the strawberry pizza pie.
So now this sounds like stuff that Trump would have done if he could, or like,
both sides would.
Oh, yeah.
So, absolutely.
Would it be illegal if Russia wasn't involved?
No, because remember what happened on the Democratic side is Bernie Sanders was bitterly complaining that the DNC was conspiring, by the way, with Hillary Clinton and not giving him access to all of this data analytic information.
Right.
I mean, keep that thought in your head. at the same time, Kirchner was being lionized for developing even a better system than Obama had. So it wouldn't. The only thing is that if there was a conspiracy, because I hate collusion, because collusion to me is nothing but conspiracy, and I don't understand why we keep using collusion. But the only way is if somebody knew. If they didn't know, and today's indictment, by the way, doesn't have, I skimmed through it before we got in the air, doesn't have anybody or any allegation saying that anybody knew. But I'm telling you, if you can read the tea leaves here, the Gates to Manafort, Manafort, they want to roll. They need Manafort to roll because they've got to close the circle.
What is this going to do to Trump in 30 seconds?
It's going to drive him. He's going to tweet storm this weekend. Tweet. It's going to be a tweet.
Where's
storm.
He going to be a year from now?
If this turns out the way I think it is, he's headed for impeachment because the Democrats will take over the House. But the problem is, just like with Clinton, the Senate will be the firewall. That's my prediction.
So nothing,
because the House draws up the charges, but the Senate is who tries the case. And unless you control the Senate, that's a rigged deal.
And just to be clear, whatever anyone is being accused of, in and of itself, would not be legal if this foreign body wasn't involved.
Yeah, if the foreign body is, understand, everybody's trying to get an edge, a microscopic edge. That's what both sides are doing.
Everyone's
yeah.
looking for an edge, but I'm saying there's certain, their guys are looking for an edge in NASCAR and they cheat.
Yeah, but this, when they're looking for opposition research, both sides are doing it. I mean, though, you
right.
go back to the
so
dossier, both sides are
it's an interesting thing because you hear Russia, 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 and cheating, 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 and then you go, but it's cheating because Russia's involved. The act itself, minus Russia,
is
per se, is just something that everyone does.
Politics
it's routine.
As usual.
It's
yeah.
routine. All right. Yeah. Gary, you did find the other snapshot that I had, which is people who could name all the members of the Supreme Court, I think it was.
Yeah, just give me a moment here.
That was one of them. And then the other was comfort,
let's see,
favorite
can I,
comfort food.
Can I take that as a test?
Take it as a test.
Chief and, Justice
all right,
Roberts.
And then don't put it up yet, Gary, and then we'll tell you. Because it's another one of the things that drive me nuts is like certain percent can, certain percent said they don't know. And then a percent went, not going to tell you. Which I was like, okay, bullshit.
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 If you knew,
if I knew, if somebody said to me, who was the starting infield for the 78 Los Angeles Dodgers, and I knew it was Lopes and Russell and Say and Garvey, I would goddamn say it immediately. I wouldn't go, well, I know, but I'm not talking.
Was Oral Hershiser on the mound?
On certain days,
yes. Every third day.
Maybe not in the 70s. Maybe.
John Roberts. You've got Kennedy. You've got Gorsuch. You've got Alito. You've got, what's her name, Elena Kagan. You've got RBG, notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I missing? Breyer. Trying to remember who else I'm missing here. Breyer, Kagan. I should have written this down all at the same time.
Using his fingers.
I've got my fingers out.
I don't know.
Did you use the newest one? Did you say that?
Gorsuch? Yeah, I had Gorsuch
on
there.
You're missing a female.
I had Alito. I had, Sonia Sotomayor.
There you go.
But I'm missing one. Who's the one I'm missing? Who's the...
Did you say Kennedy?
I said Kennedy.
I can buy you some time by doing the Pep Boys. Clarence Thomas.
Oh, Clarence Thomas. There you go.
That's racist.
Yes,
man, is that racist?
I did it. I only got it.
That
eight
is
out
so,
of the nine.
That's racist. That's white privilege.
That is white privilege.
All right. This is most adults can't name the Supreme Court. A Supreme Court justice, 63% don't know any, 34% can name at least one, 2 refused,
yeah,
and 1% can name all 9.
I apparently, I'm somewhere between the 2 and the 34%.
I like that they refuse, and yeah. I also like the USA Today carves out a piece of pie for didn't answer, yeah. doesn't want an answer.
And it's like, not just unknown or whatever, it's refused.
Yeah,
like they're really angry about it.
Those are like militia guys yeah. who just they don't want to leave.
Don't
any,
ask me about that.
I don't want to leave any paper trail, even if it's USA Today. All right, No Safe Spaces tour coming up February 27th, Phoenix Grand Canyon University. Come on out and say hi to me and Dennis Prager. We'll be doing a live show there. And live stand-up, Thunder Valley Casino, with say, don't bother us after the show. We're having a steak and a highball.
Exactly. I'm there.
That'll be March 2nd.
Sacramento, we'll see you.
You can go to amcarolla.com for everything you need, and Corolla drinks, and we got the Sea Cruise and all that. Mark, what do you got?
I've got Prova Pizza in the Grand Central Station. I've got Casa Tropicana down at San Clemente, which is Gary's favorite.
I miss that place.
10E Mediterranean Tapas downtown, and Engine Company 28 downtown and also at LAX.
So until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garagus saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.